everyone. I am Sarah Moses, the host of the Do It Now podcast. And today, I'm doing something I have never done before. I'm having a guest back for a second time because he was so popular on the show. Everyone loved his stories and they can't wait to hear more. So I'd like to welcome Sean Kelly, the founder of Do the Big Dream. And Sean, welcome to Do It Now for a second time.
Yes, thank you so much, Sarah, for having me. I'm excited to be back. It's what an honor to not only be your first guest, but then to be your first return guest. It's exciting.
I know, that's right. You were my first guest. And I want everyone who hears today's episode to go back and listen to that first episode because there were so many great stories that you told. And I know we're going to talk about new stories today. So make sure you go back and listen to that first episode. I didn't know what I was doing. I remember I put us so that when you were talking, you were on camera. But then if I was talking, you weren't on camera. It was I was having some technical things that I didn't know about. But today I am getting things a little more under my belt, I guess. And I'm really, really happy to have you come back. If you wouldn't mind telling my audience a little bit about your story.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to do it. So thank you again for having me back. For those of you who didn't get a chance to go watch or listen to that first episode, I highly recommend that you do it. It was unbelievable when I found out afterwards that that was Sarah's first time hosting a podcast. It actually kind of blew my mind because you were so natural at it. I had assumed that you'd been doing it for years. So it was incredible. And then I've gotten lots of great feedback. People who've listened to it and reached out to me and just said that they really enjoyed it. So very happy to be back. Tell you guys a little bit about myself. So I had this crazy life. I grew up as a kid over in Germany as an undocumented immigrant. My parents, we moved there. We went there on a 30-day, I think it was a 90-day visa, and we stayed for 8 years. And so we were living there as undocumented immigrants. And at 16, my parents split up. My parents moved away, and I actually found myself getting abandoned and living on my own in Germany at the age of 16. So I had kind of a rough go at it in the beginning. I ended up doing all kinds of different kinds of jobs, and I did a combat tour over in Iraq when I was younger. But because I had this really interesting upbringing where I had to learn a lot of street skills and survival at a young age and had all these really interesting experiences, as a result of that, I developed a lot of different techniques that have helped me later in life. And so one of my claim to fame is that when I was about to turn 40 years old, 3 days before my 40th birthday party, I announced to all my friends and family that I was going to create, sell, and star on my own television show, and it was going to be a worldwide hit. And my friends and family were just blown away, and they're like, oh my goodness, what's the show going to be called? I'm like, oh, I don't know. And they're like, well, what's it about? I'm like, I'm not quite sure yet. And they're like, but what network is that going to be on? I'm like, oh, I don't know. And people were like, oh, this is just a dream. And I said, yes, but it's going to be a reality. And then 9 months later, I had created Sold, and I was starring on my own show on True TV. I did 6 seasons. It ended up airing worldwide in 127 countries. It became a huge hit in the UK. A British BBC owned channel called Dave flew my wife and I to London and moved us over there for 4 years, where we made 6 more seasons on this BBC owned channel called Dave. Then I created a celebrity version called Celebrity Storage Hunters UK, where we had over 100 British celebrities come on the show. And so now what I've done is I've created this group on Facebook, and it's called Do the Big Dream, where I basically teach other people my formula for going out and achieving your big dream in life. And I give people weekly coaching, and it's extremely exciting. And I've got all kinds of great stories from my life, and I can't wait to share some of them with you today.
Yeah. I want to tell everybody they need to go and join that do the Big Dream. And because weekly you are mentoring people, it's incredible, because when you say that you announced that you were going to go do this, people don't realize how impossible that is to do, because, you know, I was in casting for a long, long time, and everybody comes to Hollywood and wants to be a TV star. And I can't even tell you, probably less than, you know, 1% of 1% ever achieve that. So the fact that you just announced it and you accomplished it within 9 months, what do you think was the magic in there that helped you do that? And now that you're sharing with other people so they can do it.
I think a lot of it goes back to my own childhood. I think a lot of it goes back to the experiences that I had growing up. incredibly important lessons that I learned. On our first podcast together, I shared the story with you about how I view rejection and how I have no fear of rejection. And I explained in that podcast the real life story that I experienced when I was 11 years old that kind of shaped the way that I view rejection. I don't view it as rejection. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the biggest tools. But I also feel like there were other experiences that I had in life that made me realize that you can make what seems impossible become a reality. And mm-hmm. especially if you look and take a path that other people aren't taking. So mm-hmm. for example, one of the reasons why I feel like I was so successful with getting a show on the air within 9 months is because I have this philosophy, and it's called, because I put a title to this because I think it's so important. It's called Enter Through the Exit. And so basically everyone is lining up at the front door, and they're always trying to do everything the correct way. And everyone's getting in line. And sometimes you don't get in the building, you know, sometimes you don't get your opportunity. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people think, okay, what's the proper way of doing this? And they mm-hmm. go and they, oh, I got to go learn how to do this. And I got to go take these courses, and then I got to go do this, and I got to apply for this, and I got to all that. And instead, mm-hmm. what I learned at a young age is that sometimes if you just go and look for the exit door, no one's expecting you to walk in through the exit, but you can still get inside the building. And you can still get your shot because you came in through the exit. So everybody's lined up, and the line out front is 3, 4, 5 hours long, or metaphorically years long. But in the back, you find that exit, and you walk in, and you're like, I'm in here. Here's my shot. Right. And that's how I've done things. And what's so cool is, like, for example, last summer, my wife and I, we were in Vienna, and we wanted to see inside the beautiful Vienna Opera House. And the whole time we were there, all the shows were sold out. And so then I realized, oh, okay, let's just, I used that same exit philosophy that I've used throughout my life. And so I said, let's just get dressed up like we're going to go to a show, and let's show up about 15 minutes before one lets out. And then we'll go to the exits. And as everybody's coming out, we'll walk into the Vienna Opera House and take ourselves on a self-guided tour. And that's exactly what we did. And so I also learned, for example, when I lived in London, we would have friends that would want to come and visit, and they want to go see the crown jewels. Well, if you go to the Tower Bridge and you want to go see the crown jewels, the line to get in after you've paid your big giant fee is like 2 to 4 hours long. But mm-hmm. if you walk around to the back of the building where the exit is, there's no one standing there. You could just walk right in, look at the crown jewels, and then leave. So whenever I would have friends come and visit, I would use my exit philosophy. I'd be like, all right, we're going to enter through the exit. But I've learned that really works.
Oh my goodness. The nuggets that you are dropping today. I mean, these are incredible secrets. And it reminds me too of that, you know, we just need to think outside the box. And I think that's what you're saying too, right? It's just try it a different way, go in a different, you know, go in the exit instead of the entrance. It's amazing. And so it sounds like you just really had to use your imagination too, though, right? When you were doing these things. And I know you've done a lot of things since then. And and I know that you're sharing a lot of new concepts with everyone when they join your Do the Big Dream community. Can you tell us about a few of the things? Because I know I had heard, you know, the first one, Power of the Pivot. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And
Power of the Pivot is one that's, I mean, all these come from real life experiences. These are all from my life. This was an incredibly powerful lesson that I learned, and I've used it throughout my life. I was 20 years old, and I was in Iraq. I was in the Gulf War and Desert Storm. And this was, I guess that was late 1990, early 1991. And I was in a military intelligence unit, and our job was to listen into the enemy. We would sit in these listening stations, and we would have these headphones on, and we're supposed to listen into the enemy and transcribe what they were saying and translate it into English, and then write up intelligence reports. But the U.S. military had done such a good job of bombing and taking out the communications of the Iraqis that there was no communication going on between their units. So that basically what everybody did in my unit was they decided to stand down and just not do anything because they're like, there's no one to listen to. But I just thought, you know, I don't know. I'm going to keep listening. So I turned on my listening gear on my truck, and you have a little booth that you sit in the back of your truck. And I put my antenna up and I just started listening. And what I started listening to was Our Own Forces. So at first I started listening to pilots and listening to them doing bombing raids and different stuff like that. And then here's what I did. Because I pivoted and nobody else did the pivot, I intercepted a conversation between the general of the 101st Airborne and the colonel of the 82nd Airborne talking to each other. And they thought they were having a secure communication. And they were talking about the grid coordinates where both units were going to jump into Iraq during the war by the Euphrates River to cut the enemy off. And because I recorded that and I got it on tape, I immediately ran to my commander, my colonel. Mm-hmm. I bypassed the entire chain of command, mm-hmm. went in. And I said, sir, I've got to play something for you that is going to change the trajectory of the ground war and could possibly save thousands of lives. I played it for him and he looked at me and he said, oh my God, Sergeant Kelly, he goes, we have to assume the enemy has this. And you're right. He immediately ordered a helicopter. He flew to Riyadh. He played that tape for General Schwarzkopf. And they realized that their battle plans were compromised. And that's why in Desert Storm, they delayed the ground war by, I think it was 72 hours, so they could come up with a new jump site so that all those guys were ambushed and killed. And I did that because I made a pivot. And that taught me in life that, like, when everybody else gives up and everyone else goes, well, what's the point? Mm-hmm. Don't give up. Pivot. And see where else and how else you could be useful or where else you can see opportunities. So that's my power of the pivot. And I think it's an incredibly powerful one. And it was a great lesson to learn at the age of 20.
That's an amazing story. I had chills up and down my body the entire time that you were sharing that story. Amazing. I hope these stories are going into a book or something. Are you working on a book where you're going to share all
the great stories? But yes, these are some of my favorites. And that's why I thought I would share this with your audience, because I think they're good lessons to learn for anyone that's out there that's trying to grow their own career, or they're trying to achieve a big dream in life or a big goal. It's mm-hmm. like, it's good to know, like, look for the exits, think about the pivots. Right. And then I have a couple other things I'd like to share too, if I sent you over.
Yeah. No, I want to talk about that. But before we move on, I want to say too, that that's also about, you're saying when things are changing and other people are sort of, you know, just sitting back, you're saying just keep going, keep taking action when others aren't, right? Or when it seems like you can't. It's such an important lesson. So yes. Okay. So we want to talk about the key. You were sharing about the key.
Yeah. So this was another thing that just, okay, the key story was something that literally saved my life, and it saved a couple lives of some guys in my unit. And it's just amazing. Well, here's what I want to tell you guys. Sometimes if you're having a conversation with someone and you feel something in your heart that you need to ask that person a question, but you don't know why, listen to that voice in your heart. Listen to that voice inside you. And just ask that question and listen to what their answer is. I was in Germany. I just arrived. It was my first night getting to my unit in Germany. And I was, again, I was 20 years old. It was July of 1990. And it was my very first night of the unit. And they had me sharing a room in the barracks with a sergeant who had been there for 4 years. It was his last night there and my first night there. So after he left, I only had to share a room with him one night. So we were kind of hanging out, and I figured this is my opportunity to ask him some questions because he'd been in the unit for 4 years. And at one point through our conversation, as we were visiting, I just had this thing in my heart that just said, ask him if he has any keys. And what that meant to me was like, any key advice? Do you have any advice for me? So I said to him, I said, hey, Sarge, I go, you've been here for 4 years. Do you have any keys for me? And he goes, why did you say that? I go, I don't know. I just felt it. He goes, oh my goodness. He goes, take your dog tags off. So I go, what? And he goes, just take your dog tags off. So I took, they're on a chain. I took them off, and he took his off, and he literally pulled a physical key off of his dog chain and gave it to me. He said, put this on your dog tags. And I go, what is it? He goes, I'll explain. So I put it on it and I tuck it back in my shirt. And he goes, when I got to this unit 4 years ago, He goes, I had a similar conversation with a guy who had been here for a long time, and he gave me this key. And he goes, and I meant to pass it to someone. And he goes, and I forgot until you just said that. And I go, what's with the key? He goes, well, every truck in the U.S. Army inventory is made by General Motors. And the same exact key starts every single ignition in every truck. The way you secure your truck so no one can steal it is there's a chain that comes up from underneath the seat, and you put the chain through the steering wheel and put a padlock on it. That's how you secure it, because they can always cut that padlock if they need to, but they don't want to have to keep rekeying the ignition if they lose keys. So if you have that key, and if you ever find yourself in combat and you lose your vehicle and you're stranded, but you come across another U.S. vehicle, you could take that key out, start the engine up, and it might save your life. And I thought to myself, okay. I thought, okay, well, that's, thank you for that. But I grew up in Germany. I knew we weren't going to war with the Soviets anytime soon. So I just thought, well, that was a really nice sentiment. And I did kind of think to myself, that's interesting that that guy gave him that key 4 years earlier, because I was 16 at the time, living in Germany, not far from that unit when that transpired. So I thought, oh, that's wild. So key goes in my shirt. The very next month, the Iraqis invade Kuwait. And a few months later, I'm on the ground. And in January, just a few months after that, I'm in combat, and guess what happens? My truck breaks down, and we're literally in combat, and the unit can't stop, and they just keep going. So it's just me and another sergeant, and we're left there, and there's firing going on from both directions. We're caught between enemy fire and friendly fire, and they finally send a tow truck back to get us, but the sun's going down. It's getting crazy. And they're trying to hook up the truck, and they get the truck onto the tow truck. There's no room in the cab for us. So me and the other sergeant jumped on the back. We're trying to hold on for dear life, but we can't catch up to the unit because they can't drive fast enough without flinging us off. Mm-hmm. Right. And then all of a sudden I look over my left and I see an abandoned US truck, and I slam on the hood of this, of the tow truck. And I go, guys, stop. And they go, what? And I go, stop. And I run over and I get that key off my keychain. I pop it in there. That engine fires up. Me and the sergeant got in there. And then we just hauled it as fast as we could. And we caught up to our unit before we end up going to battle with that night with the Republican Guards. And that key saved our life. And so it just made me realize that when you feel something in your heart, you gotta, because obviously, I don't know what people's beliefs are, but I believe that there was a much higher power that was looking after me, and put that in my heart to ask, and end up saving my life. And I just think that, so I just want to encourage everybody that when you feel something come inside you and you're like, you feel like you need to ask a question and it doesn't make any sense to you, just do it.
That's the question. That is a beautiful, amazing story. I couldn't believe it. Again, I had chills the whole time. You have the best story, Sean. Oh my goodness. I think you're saying to all of us, follow your instincts. If you feel moved to ask someone a question, wow, everyone out there, make sure you ask those questions now. Sean, this is so good. This is so good. Okay. I can't believe we have even more from you. This is amazing. Starting from scratch. What is that about?
Yeah. So that was a weekend when I was 19 years old. I was stationed outside of Boston, and it was a weekend that changed my life forever. And what it made me realize was that as long as I had my health, I was going to be okay, and that I could succeed pretty much at anything that I put my mind to. It was an incredible weekend. So I'm stationed in the Army. I'm at Fort Devens, and there's an older, I was a young guy. I was a PFC. At the time I was an E3, and there was an older guy who was an E6. He was a special forces sergeant, and he was there for the same training that I was there for. And typically E3s and E6s don't really hang out with each other, but during training, they make an exception. So he said to me, Kelly, you always go by your last name. Hey, Kelly, what are your plans for this weekend? And we had a long 4-day weekend. And I said, oh, I don't have any plans. He goes, you're not going home? I go, oh, no, home's in Germany. I go, I don't have any plans. He goes, do you want to play an entrepreneur game? And I wasn't even sure what entrepreneur meant. This is 1999. I was 19 years old. So I'm like, what are we talking about here? He goes, it's like a business game. He goes, we'll leave the barracks on Friday morning early, and we'll just leave with just our clothes on. Just our jacket and our clothes and our driver's license and no money. And we won't come back to the barracks until Monday night. And we won't have our ID. We'll only have a photo ID. We won't have any money with us. We won't have credit cards. We won't have anything. And I go, yeah, but I go, how will we eat? He goes, yeah, now you're getting it. I go, I don't think so. He goes, no. I go, but where will we sleep? He goes, yeah, now you got it. I go, no, I don't think I'm getting it. He goes, dude, we're going to go out and we're going to see how much money we can make starting from scratch. And we're just going to hustle. And he goes, our back's up against the wall and we have to commit to each other. We can't come back until Monday night. And this guy's confidence was so contagious. And I just thought, okay, all right, let's do this, right? So the first idea that we had was to go dumpster diving for cans and bottles to get the redemption. We cashed those in. We ended up hiring a guy that had a van with that money. And he took us around to more dumpsters. We got cans, bottles. We found some used uniforms. We found a bunch of CDs people had thrown away. We took those to the used music store and cashed them in. We cashed in the cans and bottles. We sold the uniforms at the Army Navy store. We took all that money. We bought a Polaroid camera and some film at the PX2 train tickets into Boston. Our idea was to stand outside the Cheers bar and take pictures of tourists. This was 1989. Nobody had phones. It's Polaroids of people standing in front of the Cheers sign of the tourists. We sold those for $5 a piece. We did it until 2 a.m. when the bar closed. Then we went to a Dunkin' Donuts. We asked if we could sleep in the booth. The lady goes, buy a cup of coffee. I don't care what you do. So this morning we wake up, we go through the classifieds looking for a way to reinvest the money we'd made the night before. We see this guy selling a whole storage unit full of t-shirts that say I Heart Boston for $1 a piece, but you had to take the whole storage unit. So we showed up in a taxi and we jam-packed the taxi from floor to ceiling with all these t-shirts. We went back to the Cheers bar. We stood out there. We sold t-shirts. We sold t-shirts for $5 a piece. We sold the Polaroids for $5 a piece. By the end of the weekend, we had made $3,500 after expenses, $1,750 a piece. And what that made me realize was that I was going to be okay, that I could have zero, zilch, nada. My back could be against the wall. And as long as I had my health and my ideas and ingenuity, and I was willing to get out and hustle, that I was going to be all right. And I want to share that with your audience because I just want them to realize that so many of us have resources that we don't have to start from zero. Mm-hmm. So even if you're starting with nothing, because I hear people say, oh, I just don't have this or I don't have that. Go get it. Go make it happen.
Right.
Just get creative and make it happen. And you can do so. And then the other big story that came out of that, which is a philosophy I've carried with me for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. is getting gigantic results in little windows of time.
Okay.
So I believe I make my money that way as what I do for a living, where mm-hmm. I raise money for nonprofits. I make all my annual income spread over, 25 nights of the year, and the rest mm-hmm. of the year I work on things I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. So I believe in making large sums of money in like little windows of time. I believe in getting big accomplishments in little windows of time. And that weekend is what taught me that.
Wow. That's an amazing story. I'm so glad you shared that because I think especially nowadays, young people and older people, we need to be reminded, as you said, that you can make something out of nothing. That's basically what you did. And you just had what? Grit, chutzpah?
Yes.
You had, I mean, it's an amazing story.
Yeah. It was a great life lesson to carry forward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you mentioned just a moment ago about your work that you do. Can you go into that a little more about your auctioneering and for the nonprofits, and actually what, I mean, you've made huge amounts of money, correct?
Yeah. So I have raised over $500 million for nonprofits now. Mm-hmm. And it's mind blowing because, as a young man, when I was 16 and I found myself abandoned in Germany and I'm living on my own and trying to finish high school on my own, and my self-worth wasn't where it should have been. Mm-hmm. To think that I would go on to have that large of an impact on so many tens of thousands of people who are really deserving of this help, and to think that I was the conduit for that to happen, and that I get to get on stage and raise that money as the auctioneer, and also be able to inspire audiences just to give large sums of money through a paddle raise. Mm-hmm. To think that my life could go on to have that much meaning is just kind of mind blowing. I'm humbled by it, and I'm very grateful for it.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you for all the service that you've done for our country and all the service you do for these nonprofits. It's amazing.
I love it.
I know you can't reveal all of your secrets, but is there sort of one special thing you've noticed as you've become this really, really successful auctioneer that sets you apart? Because you're hugely successful at this. And also, does it have something to do with your background in comedy, do you think, as a stand-up? We haven't had a chance to talk about that yet either, so.
Yeah, you know what? So this dovetails with a story that I want to tell you.
Okay.
I think I sent this across to you. I said it in my message to you. I said, if nobody will give it to you, then just create it and give it to others.
And okay.
It ties into my comedy story. And it ties into, I think, why I've been so good at what I do. So I'll share that with you. Okay. When I first started out as a comedian over 20 years ago, 25 years ago now, I was horrible. And all new comedians are really bad. It doesn't matter. Sometimes open micers think they're better than they are. But trust me, anyone who's new at stand-up comedy, you're terrible at it. And you're terrible at it for a long time. And the reason why is because you just don't have the stage time. You don't have the, you weren't given the stage time to develop the timing and the delivery and the pauses and the confidence on stage and all the things that go inside the tool belt of a really successful comedian. And so what ends up happening is when you first start out as an open micer, people don't want to give you stage time because they work so hard to get their audiences there. They don't want to put up a crappy comedian who's going to risk offending people or walking the audience because they're horrible. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, you are relegated to doing little tiny open mic shows where they're bringer shows and it's mostly filled with the audience with other comedians who really aren't going to laugh because they're thinking about their own material or they're analyzing what you're saying. So it's really hard to get good stage time. And then here's what the answer ends up being. No, we're not going to book you. And that's a hard hurdle to get over. Mm-hmm. So when I sent you this across, I said, if nobody will give it to you, then just create it and give it to others. And that's exactly what I did. Mm-hmm. I realized, okay, nobody's giving me stage time. I need the stage time to get better. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to create my own comedy show and I'm going to book myself. So I found a Greek restaurant in San Diego that was only open during lunch because they were right next to traffic court. But because they were in like a strip center, a business center, and there was no residential around there, they were closed every night. But they had 217 seats. They had a stage. They had lighting. They had a DJ booth. They had everything I needed. So I went in and convinced them to let me run a comedy show in there at night. And what I did was instead of doing traditional marketing, and trying to spend a bunch of money on traditional marketing, I also thought, okay, how am I going to back over this? how can I fill this thing up without spending a bunch of money on marketing? And how can I make my money on the backside? So here's what I ended up doing was I ended up businesses. And in the business, and inside each envelope was a letter inviting the company and their employees to a comedy show. And inside there were 20 tickets, and each ticket was good for two people. So I was inviting 40 people at each company. And I mailed out 200 envelopes for every single show. So that's basically inviting 8,000 people, but I only had 217 seats. They had to have reservations. Oh. And those tickets were only good for that one show. And if they didn't use it by that show, then they lost it. Oh, and they didn't get to come. So I filled seven shows every week for 8 years, one on Thursday night, three on Friday night, and three on Saturday night. And I put myself on as the headliner for all 8 years. And I became incredibly good on stage, incredibly good. I mean, with that much stage time, you can imagine doing three shows every Friday night and three shows every Saturday night, every week for 8 years. Your timing, your delivery, everything's going to be spectacular. Now, I'm not saying that your audience needs to do anything like that, but here's where this dovetails back into what I'm saying, which is if nobody will give it to you, then you should create it and give it to others. What mm-hmm. I did then was all these other comedians who couldn't get stage time in other places, mm-hmm. I would give them stage time. Also, I would reach out to comedians who were really funny that I wanted to network with, and I would give them stage time. And mm-hmm. then they would reciprocate by giving me stage time at their shows or through their friends. And that's how I built my comedy career rapidly. So mm-hmm. the only reason I kept it going for 8 years was because remember I told you I figured out how to backdoor it and make my money on
right.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody came out on the free tickets. But what I would do at the end of the show is I'd say, hey, everybody, did you have a great time tonight? And they go, yeah. And I go, wonderful. Listen, the restaurant makes their money on the food and drink sales. You guys got free tickets to come in. The comedians, the way we make our money, we got a tip bucket outside. If you had a great time, toss something in there. We'll be out there shaking hands, taking pictures. We greatly appreciate it. If you want to support comedy, do it. And so through that method, I don't want to disclose how much, but we made a lot of money performing. And so we made our money on after we gave them the product for free.
Right.
And so a lot of people wouldn't tip, but the ones who did, it really made up for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a joke that I would make about what we would do for them if they gave us $20. And so everybody wanted to be in on the joke. And so we got lots and lots of 20s, and those 20s add up fast. So that is my thing, which is this. If you're trying to start something new in your life, and let's say it involves public speaking, let's say it doesn't matter what it involves.
Mm-hmm.
If nobody will give you an opportunity,
mm-hmm.
you just go out and create it and give mm-hmm. other people an opportunity, the opportunity that nobody will give you. And then as a result of that, it will catapult you and grow you like crazy. Now, what ended up happening was because I had so much stage time,
mm-hmm.
when I decided to create and sell my own TV show, I was natural on camera because I already had all that stage time. And every time a show would start, I would get up there and get it going. And then I would headline it. I would welcome everybody. And then in the middle of the show, I'd get up and headline the show. So I had 8 years of like, here we go, we're doing it. Right.
Uh-huh.
And So I think it's really important for your listeners to realize that whatever your dream is, whatever it is you want to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
if no one's giving you that opportunity, you just go create it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Breathe it into existence and then just be generous and give it away to others the same way you couldn't get it. And it will just lift you up like 10,000 hands, like straight to the sky. It's awesome.
Right. This is amazing, Sean. I can't believe it because it sounds like every time you saw an obstacle, you turned that obstacle upside down. Right. And then create, as you said, you were creating a stage for yourself, but then you were removing an obstacle that you knew all the other comedians had as well, because you had that obstacle,
yes.
right? And just the generosity, like you said, it just was amazing karma. I don't know if any of the listeners are feeling this. I'm feeling really lazy right now after listening to you tell all these stories. I'm like, wow, I really got to start doing a little more work. And I just love every story. I can't get enough of it. I want to though, I do want to hear a little bit.
Can I say one last thing, which is this? What's so crazy about this was I had fully intended to become a famous person on TV and then have people come see me do stand-up comedy in the United States. That didn't happen. Mm-hmm. What ended up happening was something that was even better, which was even really more aligned with the dream that I never even thought was possible, which was this. Yeah, I got onto True TV in the United States, but at the same time, my show came out. It was called Storage Hunters. Right after that, Storage Wars came out on A&E, and it became a much bigger show. So mm-hmm. my show looked kind of cheesy and a little fake and whatever, where Storage Wars did more, they shot it more of like a documentary style. So that's the show that became big in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But who would have ever guessed it ended up becoming a huge hit, my show did, in the UK, because the Brits love those American stereotypes that we had on the show. And as a result of it, we wound up on a comedy channel in the UK and it got all the comedy viewers. And then when all those viewers found out that I also did stand up, that's how I was able to do 122 city stand-up comedy tour in the UK, a giant theater tour, was because I had the number one show, even though it was a storage auction show, it was considered funny. I had the number one funny show on the comedy channel in the UK. And then that allowed me to do my dream of doing comedy tours. And I would have never guessed when I started off at creating this comedy palace inside a Greek restaurant in San Diego, California, that I would wind up getting to live in the UK, film in the UK, do comedy tours in the UK. And then all my days off, check off my bucket list traveling in Europe. So you just never know when you create this stuff where you're going to wind up, but it's amazing where it can go.
Oh yeah. It's incredible. And I'm wondering, so your wife must be as adventurous as you are, right? Cause it sounds like you've lived a lot of places, gone to a lot of countries, had a lot of different careers. So she's had to be on board for all this, right? I mean,
yeah, Lori's very adventurous. My wife has a very like fascinating background herself. She had been in the Army. She had worked as a breaking encrypted code. She worked for a three-letter agency that starts with C and ends with A in Berlin.
Wow.
She would break encrypted codes and write reports. So she also had a real passion for travel and very adventurous. Her parents instilled that with her at a young age. They sent her on a trip to Europe when she was 16, and then she caught the travel bug. And so together, Lori and I have been to 93 countries, but Lori has her own fascinating background. I mean, Lori used to be the personal assistant to Joan Rivers. And so Lori worked with Joan for years. And so when Joan had her own talk show, Lori was with her. When Joan was auditioning, when Edgar took his life, Lori was with her during all of that and helped her through that whole period. So Lori was with Joan Rivers for 4 years, got to meet tons of people in show business. And Lori's best friend, her best friend's father, was the manager of Bob Hope, Don Rickles, and Bob Newhart. So Lori grew up as a kid around those families. So Lori loved comedy. And so in the fact that I loved comedy and wanted to be a comedian, and she had worked as the personal assistant to one of the biggest comedians in the world. I mean, she was completely on board with this entire journey. And I think that's important is to find a soulmate that, you know, that's in it with you, in it to win it. And, you know, because if we had much different goals, it would have been a little more difficult,
Amazing. I want to have Lori on my podcast, and so you'll have to put in a good word for me.
Yes, absolutely.
So I want to make sure we have, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about on the special stories? Because I know you and I had to communicate a little bit beforehand because you had told such amazing stories the first episode. I want to remind everybody, go back and listen to that episode, because I mean, the Billy the Kid story alone, I'm just going to tell everybody my favorite story. But have we covered the massive opportunities offered by Exit Doors?
Yes, we did. In the very beginning, I was telling you guys about Vienna. So yeah, you did it. You let me tell my five stories. And I think these are five powerful stories because the lessons that come out of them, even if we just focused on just one of these stories, the lessons that come out of them are incredible. But the nice thing about being able to share this with your listeners is I think a lot of your listeners are looking to go out, you know, and do something incredible with their life to get more out of this life. And so these tools, I mean, look, you know, I've been living on my own since I was 16. I didn't attend university. You know, I have a high school diploma barely. But I have had the most incredible, amazing life. And I believe that one of the reasons why is because I believe, you know, God's been looking after me, but I also believe that it's all right here in your mind.
Yes.
And once you realize that if you can see it and dream it and believe it, and you're willing to go out and take action and not give up, it's amazing what we can accomplish. I would imagine, I would say that most people, they just don't set their dreams or their goals big enough.
Right, right, right. You know, it's interesting that you talk about that, because one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, you know, I know you have mentored different people and some of them to huge success. And I was curious if there's something that you have identified is different between the ones that achieve their big dream and the ones who maybe fall a little short. Is there something that you notice about them that they're doing differently? Or maybe it's just mindset that you're talking about.
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I'm really glad you asked me that. Because for example, I would say that, you know, I think you might be referencing like the actor comedian, Jimmy O Yang. Jimmy's had two comedy specials on Amazon. He's been in several movies. He's got a current show out, just getting ready to come out on Hulu right now, called Inside Chinatown. But he was on the TV show Silicon Valley. He's been on, he was on the TV show Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He had some parts on Two Broke Girls. He was, he's done movies with Melissa McCarthy and with tons of different actors. It's huge. And he's, I mean, as we speak, he is getting ready, I think next week, to perform at Carnegie Hall in New York. So, you know, it's just, And he got to do the Opera House in Sydney. I mean, it's just this young man is setting the world on fire. But when I first met him, when I first met this guy, he came walked into my comedy club, and he asked if he could get up on stage and I could watch him. And he was looking for regular stage time, and he got up, and he was not very funny, and he wasn't he was telling stuff that was it was inappropriate, and it was basically like the kind of jokes that any young person could just go up and tell. It was nothing special. Mm-hmm. So when he came and sat down with me, I said, "Hey," I go, "let me ask you something." I go, "You are, you have an Asian accent, but you also speak kind of like you're African American." I go, "What's your story here?" I go, and he goes, "Oh," he goes, "I moved to the United States when I was 13 from Hong Kong, and I didn't speak English. And every day I would watch Yo MTV Raps and Rap City." And he goes, "And those became my heroes. I loved all the rappers and everything. And I started making beats when I was like 13 and 14. And I go, "That's hilarious." I go, that's what you should be talking about on stage. I go, "I'll tell you what, if you'll come here and you'll just write material about your life, about growing up in Hong Kong and coming to America and all the differences, I'll give you all the stage time you want." And then I go, "And then someday you can take that and you can write a book, and then you can go out and give talks on the book. And then someday you can go out and you can make a career for yourself in Hollywood, you know," mm-hmm. "you'll do that." And so to his credit, he did exactly that. He took me up on my offer. He started writing the material. He started working it out on stage. And then one day a fellow comedian steered him in the wrong direction and got him a job working at a strip club as a strip club DJ. And two of the bouncers beat up a couple of guys, young military guys that were in the club, beat him up really bad and put him in the hospital. And Jimmy was there and he witnessed it. So I heard this and I called Jimmy up and I said, "Jimmy, is this true?" I go, "Are you working as a strip club DJ?" And he goes, "Yeah, I just started working there about a week." I go, listen to me very carefully. I said, "You go and you quit that job today. You go home, you pack your car up, and you move to Los Angeles, and you start going on auditions." Mm-hmm. And I said, "If you will do that, we can remain friends." I go, "If you don't do that today, lose my phone number, don't ever call me again." He goes, "Are you serious?" I go, "Yeah." I go, "'Cause listen to me." I go, "Stuff that's going to happen in that environment is going to start to feel normal to you. And it's going to be so much temptation. It's going to pull you down." And I go, "It's going to break my heart to see someone with so much talent not go off and pursue their dreams." I go, "You quit today or don't ever call me again." And he's like, mm-hmm. "Man, okay." And to his credit, he quit his job. He packed his car and he moved to LA that day. He went, he found himself a manager who got him auditions, and he got rejected on the first 113 auditions he went on. The 114th one, he got a walk-on part on Two Broke Girls. And then things just took off from there. Then he wrote the book, and the book became a bestseller. It's called How to American: An Immigrant's Guide to Disappointing Your Parents. It's hilarious. And in there, he has a chapter called The Godfather, where he talks about my influence on him and how I coached him through all that and how I saved him from that horrible trajectory that he was on. So I would say Jimmy has gone on to make millions and millions and millions of dollars as an actor, as a comedian. Mm-hmm. He has a bright career ahead of him. Mm-hmm. And I would say that of all the people I've coached a lot of people that have had a lot of successful outcomes, but I would say he was the first one, you know, because it was years ago. And so we've had enough time has allowed to go by where things have been amazing. And now it's really all Jimmy's credit. He works hard. He has surrounded himself with the most professional. He's at the top agencies, top managers. He's always thinking about how to grow his career, and he's having a great time and he's loving it. So I think that those are all good lessons for anyone that's out there, is don't get sidetracked. Worked hard. Don't give up in the face of defeat. Like the way he got rejected on 113 auditions. Just keep going. If it's your dream, and if you believe this is your life's purpose, because that helps too. It has to be your life. If you really believe in your heart, like I am meant to do this, then you will do it.
Wow, that is an amazing story. And you know, the two things I also saw in there, for anyone out there who has a big dream and they want to go achieve something big, is find a mentor, find a coach, someone who has done what you want to do, who has had big success like you had, but then also listen to what they say.
Do you want to know what's interesting? Is that when I coached Jimmy on that, I hadn't been on Storage Hunters yet. I just had the comedy club.
Yeah.
I hadn't even been on TV. I hadn't even done all those things, but I could see it in him. Right. I could see it in him. And mm-hmm. I felt it in my heart. I knew that this kid was special and that he, and that he could accomplish mm-hmm. it. He put his mind to it. And he had such a unique, awesome story.
Yes. That's also the brilliance of when you have a mentor or coach, because you steered him back to what was unique and authentic about him that no one else could tell that story, right? Because he was, as you said, on stage talking about generic things that anyone could talk about. And you said, no, what's special about you and your story and authentic to only you? And I love that you found that, you know, to tell him or I don't know. It's as if you just knew that was going to be his ticket, right, to success. And it turns out that it was, right?
I think a good coach or a good consultant will always sit down and get to know the other person and then it's really in their heart. And the thing is that even myself, when I decided I want to have a TV show, the reason why I waited until I was 40 was because I was scared to even admit it to myself. Like, it seems so crazy. Like you said at the beginning of this interview, trying to get your own TV show is like capturing lightning in a bottle. It's like so hard to do. And then when you go and announce that to your friends and family, you look and sound delusional, like you're having a midlife crisis, you know? So luckily it all worked out, you know? But yeah. The other thing I want to tell people is that sometimes you start off in one direction and it doesn't necessarily work out. But what ends up happening is kind of like that learning about the power of the pivot, is that all of a sudden, because you went down that path, you all of a sudden something else comes into view and you go, oh my goodness, I didn't think of that before. You know, it's like how I was listening in. I would have never thought that I was going to intercept the conversation between this general and this colonel that would end up saving all these lives. I never imagined that.
Right. I think it's incredible what you were just talking about too, though. When you had that dream, you were worried about what other people thought. I like to mention that on every episode, just talk about that theme of, we need to stop caring what other people think.
Yes.
I mean, think about that. You were going to let go of one of your biggest dreams because of what other people might think about it. And I just think it's incredible, because I did that for a long time too. And then I just got to this point where I said, I'm not going to care what anyone else thinks about anything that I do. This is my life. I have one life, and we all have one life, and we have to go out and do it now, right?
No do-overs.
No do-overs.
Yeah. And the other thing too is like, in my particular case, I was 40 and I'd never even done community theater. I'd never been on an audition. I'd never done anything in television or movie or Hollywood. I didn't, none of that stuff. And my wife, even though she'd been Joan Rivers' personal assistant, she didn't know anything about that side of the business. She just used to help Joan with stuff, but she didn't know anything about her agents or managers or any. She didn't know how to get she didn't know how to break into Hollywood like that. You know, what you have to do sometimes is you have this big dream and then you just have to say, okay, I'm just going to start taking action logically what I think, and I'm just going to go down this path and see where it leads me.
Right. And the concept of dream a lot bigger than you think, because that's impossible to accomplish. And yet you did. So that's proof that you can do it, right? That others can do it.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible inspiration that you've shared with us today.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on and being able to share some more of my stories, because, because I always know that there's people out there that need to hear these messages. And that you're not meant to just hold on to them. I believe that once you've crossed over somewhere, you are way better off to reach back with that open hand and to help people, you know, because I would have loved if someone had been able to help me at different stages of my career, but I just didn't know who that help was or where to get it. Mm-hmm. And when I first started, you know, back, you know, 14 years ago, it's not like 14 years ago, YouTube wasn't even that big, you know, like, right. So yeah, it's so nice that you're providing a platform to share these ideas with people who genuinely want to go out there and accomplish amazing things with their life.
Yeah. And I love how this, you creating the do the Do the Big Dream community on Facebook, which I want to tell everybody, it's an amazing community.
Thank you.
Sean has weekly meetings. It's free, and he's giving all this guidance and support and helping people like all of us who have big dreams. But what I love is it's another instance where you saw something that you wish you had had in your past and you didn't, so you're creating it and giving it to other people. It's amazing.
It's literally like when I created the Comedy Palace, but it's but in the same kind of idea, which was I was looking for opportunities to go out and do public speaking and to coaching and all of that. And but I didn't have a book yet. I didn't quite have it really figured out, all the different things that I wanted to teach on or whatever. But what I know is that I had gone off and I had created and made this gigantic dream come true. And I went back and I thought about all the steps that I followed to get me there. And there were 15 specific, you know, I went through my mind. I'm like, oh, first I did this and I did this and I did this. And I'm like, wow, that's a formula. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do kind of like what I did with the Comedy Palace, where I gave away free tickets. I gave away free stage time. I gave away things that I wanted that other, you know, and so by creating this group, I think we have 257, 58 members in there now. And every Monday I go on Zoom. I have been recording them and posting them back in the group. It's kind of one of these things like capturing lightning in a bottle. Right. If you're there, you get to be part of the magic. If you're not there, you're not. But like some people are like, when I give them advice on, you know, techniques to go accomplish their dreams, they're like, you're not recording this? I'm like, nope, hope you're taking notes.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, it's so anyone that wants to join us, you can find us by going to it's you can just go to my website and there's links there. It's dothebigdream.com. So dothebigdream.com. That'll take you to a website for Do the Big Dream. And then throughout that website, there's a ton of links, kind of tells my story. And come in, join us. Like Sarah said, it's free, you know, it's like, you know, and it's, and it's not just me. There's other people like Sarah, you join us some weeks and there's other people with great experience chiming in and in the comments and on camera saying, hey, think about, have you thought of this? Have you thought of that? Yeah. And there's so many just, and I'll be honest with you, from a selfish standpoint, me doing this every week has also motivated me to do some other things in my life and to implement some other things that have been wonderful. And, you know, I think I mentioned to you earlier before this started, I got some work coming up next summer in the UK and that wouldn't have been prompted had I not been out helping other people on their dreams. And I was like, oh, I got it. What am I doing? I got to do this. I got to do that. So it's been a really good accountability tool for myself as well.
Oh, that's so cool. I know we only have a couple more minutes, but is there one story that you can tell us about one of the people in your group, some big dream that they're working on and anyone? I know you have so many people in that community that you're helping, but.
Yeah, there's a lot of people working on a variety of different, you know, big dreams. And it's interesting to hear what people's big dreams are. You know, sometimes it's a business or sometimes it's performing or speaking, or sometimes it's, you know, having a bucket list of things that they wanted to accomplish. Or sometimes it's like trying to create their own podcast, or, you know, it's just, it's really kind of all over the board what people's dreams are. You know, we have one lady in there who, she's, you know, she's a librarian in Ohio and she, you know, she has this dream of doing this one woman show about her grandmother who was a gigantic impact on her life. She's never been on stage. She's never performed before. She's never, other than writing some poetry, she's never tried to write anything like this. And she doesn't come in every week, but, you know, every couple of weeks she pops back in, or maybe every other week. And it's amazing because she's making so much progress, and it's, she has it written now, and she's starting to, you know, perform it in private, and she's got the confidence, but she's going to do this, and she's going to end up delivering this one woman show. And she's bringing the stories of this woman who was such a big influence on her, this, her grandmother. She's bringing that to the stage and honoring her grandmother who's since passed away and letting the world get a glimpse of this amazing woman. And so that's like one dream. And then, you know, like we have another guy, he's down in Mexico and he wants to have his own wine bar eventually. And he wants us, he, in order to get to the point where he can have enough money to do his own wine bar, he's creating this business where he's going to do catering for wine tastings and charcuterie boards, and he's going to do these high-end events, and he's going to save up his money, and he's going to use the money from the savings to go make a down payment on a bar that he could convert to a high-scale wine bar, you know? And he wants to introduce people in Mexico to the different varieties of wines in Mexico and South America. And then the dreams just go on and on and on.
I know, it's incredible. I'm thinking of the beautiful mom Alex, who is creating this product, right? It's a toy to help so that kids aren't on their screens all the time. I mean, and she's
Alex is an immigrant. She's originally from Poland, and so so her children are first generation Americans, and she's an immigrant mom, and she realizes that that the amount of screen time that small kids are spending isn't necessarily helpful or healthy for them. Mm-hmm. And there was that time she can remember growing up as a kid in Poland where she would get out and play with the neighbor kids and, you know, and just really that socialization and the different skills that you learn and the social skills that you learn. And so she wants to try to figure out how to pull the kids off the screen time and give parents an option to give their kids really engaging, fun toys that are also educational and then passion, and she's working on it and she's not giving up. And there's been a lot of trial and error. She's designed some products, she's ordered them from different places around the world and some manufacturers in the United States, and this has gone wrong and that's gone wrong, but she just keeps going back, and she's struggling to build a community and trying to get other parents that are just as equally as interested in getting their kids off the screens. But it's anytime you have a big dream, and anytime you want to accomplish something amazing. And she's definitely picking something that is going against the stream. She's trying to swim upstream, because most parents are just like, let them have the iPad, let them have the phone, whatever. There's enough children's content on there, you know?
Right.
And she's trying to say, let's get them off the screens.
Yeah. And that's what I love about your community, is it's not only people who have big dreams, but people who are doing really important work. They want to change something in this world. And then they get into a community and there's other people there. As you said, you're not the only one always sharing ideas. There's other people pitching in. There's accountability. There's support. You see other people making progress, and it inspires you too. I just think it's an amazing community. So I want everyone out there to go out to and find dothebigdream.com.
Yes.
And join the community. And Sean, I want to thank you so much for all the stories and the wisdom that you've shared with all of us today. It's amazing.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. And you know, it's my goal to get out there and share these stories with more and more people. And I have tons more stories. And I got the chance to speak at a school in front of 416 year olds in the UK once, and to share some of these stories to inspire these kids. And it was one of the greatest days of my life. Afterwards, all these kids lined up to give me hugs and take pictures with me. And I realized, wow, this is really impactful, and this is really going to help them. And I think we're so lucky, you and I, to have learned these different lessons, but we would be very selfish not to share them. And so you providing this platform to be able to share these ideas with your listeners, thank you very much. I feel very honored to be here today.
Oh, thank you, Sean. Thank you for coming on a second time. I know I'm going to have you on a third time, because your stories are just way too good.
Gorgeous.
And thank you. And yes, everyone, you can find Sean at dothebigdream.com. I want to thank all of you for listening today. And make sure you go out there, whatever your big dream is, do it now, do it now, do it now. Because the worst thing you could do to yourself is not become the person that you could be in this lifetime. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.